Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Stories for the Road and Agatha Christie's The Mystery of the Blue Train. This is your host, John Hagedorn. Today, chapters 31 through 33, as we approach the ending of our story. And now, chapter 31, Mr. Aaron's Lunches. "Ah," said Mr. Joseph Aaron's appreciatively. He took a long draught from his tankard, set it down with a sigh, wiped the froth from his lips, and beamed across the table at his host, Monsieur Hercule Poirot. "Give me," said Mr. Aarons, "a good porterhouse steak and a tankard of something worth drinking, and anyone can have your French falals and whatnots, your hors d'oeuvres and your omelets and your little bits of quail. Give me," he reiterated, "a porterhouse steak." Poirot, who had just complied with this request, smiled sympathetically. "Not that there's much wrong with a steak and kidney pudding," continued Mr. Aarons. "Apple tart? Yes, I will take apple tart, thank you, miss, and a jug of cream." The meal proceeded. Finally, with a long sigh, Mr. Aarons laid down his spoon and fork preparatory to toying with some cheese before turning his mind to other matters. "There was a little matter of business, I think you said, Monsieur Poirot," he remarked. "Anything I can do to help you, I am sure I shall be most happy."
"That is very kind of you," said Poirot. "I said to myself, if you want to know anything about the dramatic profession, there is one person who knows all that is to be known, and that is my old friend, Mr. Joseph Aarons."
"And you don't say far wrong," said Mr. Aarons complacently. "Whether it is past, present, or future, Joe Aarons is the man to come to."
"Precisamente. Now I want to ask you, Monsieur Aarons, what you knew about a young woman called Kidd?"
"Kidd? Kitty Kidd?"
"Yes, Kitty Kidd.
Pretty smart she was. Male impersonator, song and dance. That one?"
"That is the one."
"Very smart she was. Made a good income. Never out of an engagement. Male impersonation mostly, but, as a matter of fact, you couldn't touch her as a character actress."
"So I have heard," said Poirot. "But she has not been appearing lately, has she?"
"No. Dropped right out of things. Went over to France and took up with some swell nobleman there. She quitted the stage then for good and all, I guess."
"How long ago was that?"
"Let me see. About 3 years ago. And she's been a loss, let me tell you that."
"She was clever?"
"Clever as a cartload of monkeys."
"You don't know the name of the man she became friends with in Paris?"
"He was a swell, I know that. A count. Or was it a marquis? Now I come to think of it, I believe it was a marquis."
"And you know nothing about her since?"
"Nothing. Never even run across her accidentally. I bet she is tooling around some of those foreign resorts, being a marquise to the life. You couldn't put one over on Kitty. She would give as good as she got any day."
"I see," said Poirot, thoughtfully.
"I'm sorry I can't tell you more, Monsieur Poirot. I would like to be of use to you if I could. You did me a good turn once."
"Ah, but we're quits on that. You, too, did me a good turn."
"One good turn deserves another, ah," said Mr. Aarons.
"Your profession must be a very interesting one," said Poirot.
"So-so," said Mr. Aarons, noncommittally. "Taking the rough with the smooth, it's all right. I don't do so badly at it, all things considered. But you have to keep your eyes skinned. Never know what the public will jump for next."
"Dancing has come very much to the fore in the last few years," murmured Poirot reflectively.
"I never saw anything in this Russian ballet, but people like it. Too highbrow for me.
I met one dancer at La Riviera, Mademoiselle Morel."
"Morel? She's hot stuff, by all accounts. There's always money going back to her, though, so far as that goes. The girl can dance.
I've seen her, and I know what I'm talking about. I never had much to do with her myself, but I hear she is a terror to deal with. Tempers and tantrums all the time.
Yes, said Poirot, thoughtfully. Yes, so I should imagine.
Temperament, said Mr. Aarons. Temperament! That's what they call it themselves. My missus was a dancer before she married me, but I'm thankful to say she never had any temperament. You don't want temperament in the home, Monsieur Poirot.
I agree with you, my friend. It is out of place there.
A woman should be calm and sympathetic, and a good cook, said Mr. Aarons.
Muriel has not been long before the public, has she?
Asked Poirot.
About 2.5 years, that's all,
said Mr. Aarons. Some French duke started her. I hear now that she's taken up with the ex-prime minister of Greece. These are the chaps who manage to put money away quietly.
That is news to me, said Poirot.
Oh, she's not one to let the grass grow under her feet. They say that young Kettering murdered his wife on her account. I don't know, I am sure. Anyway, he is in prison, and she had to look round for herself, and pretty smart she's been about it. They say she's wearing a ruby the size of a pigeon's egg. Not that I've ever seen a pigeon's egg myself, but that is what they always call it in works of fiction.
A ruby the size of a pigeon's egg, said Poirot.
His eyes were green and cat-like.
How interesting.
I had it from a friend of mine, said Mr. Aarons. But, for all I know, it may be colored glass. They're all the same, these women. They never stop telling tall stories about their jewels. Morel goes about bragging that it has a curse on it. Heart of fire, I think she calls it.
But if I remember rightly, said Poirot, the ruby that is named Heart of Fire is the center stone in a necklace.
There you are. Didn't I tell you there's no end to the lies women will tell about their jewelry? This is a single stone, hung on a platinum chain round her neck. But as I said before, 10 to 1 it's a bit of colored glass.
No, said Poirot gently. No, somehow I do not think it is colored glass.
We'll return with Chapter 32 right after these sponsor messages. And now, Chapter 32, Catherine and Poirot compare notes.
"You have changed, mademoiselle," said Poirot suddenly.
He and Catherine were seated opposite each other at a small table at the Savoy.
"Yes, you have changed," he continued. "In what way?"
"Mademoiselle, these nuances are difficult to express."
"I am older."
"Yes, you are older. And by that I do not mean that the wrinkles and the crow's feet are coming. When I first saw you, mademoiselle, you were a looker-on at life. You had the quiet, amused look of one who sits back on the stalls and watches the play.
And now?"
"Now you no longer watch. It is an absurd thing, perhaps, that I say here, but you have a wary look of a fighter who is playing a difficult game."
"My old lady is difficult sometimes," said Catherine, with a smile. "But I can assure you that I don't engage in deadly contest with her. You must go down and see her some day, Monsieur Poirot. I think you are one of the people who would appreciate her pluck and her spirit."
There was a silence while the waiter deftly served them with chicken en casserole. When he had departed, Poirot said,
"You have heard me speak of my friend Hastings? He who said that I was a human oyster. Eh bien, mademoiselle, I have met my match in you. You, far more than I, play a lone hand."
"Nonsense," said Catherine lightly.
"Never does Hercule Poirot talk nonsense. It is as I say."
Again there was a silence. Poirot broke it by inquiring,
"Have you seen any of our Riviera friends since you have been back, mademoiselle?"
"I have seen something of Major Knighton."
"Aha, is that so?"
Something in Poirot's twinkling eyes made Catherine lower hers.
"So Mr. Van Alden remains in London?"
"Yes."
"I must try to see him tomorrow or the next day."
"You had news for him?"
"What makes you think that?" I wondered, that is all.
Poirot looked across at her with twinkling eyes.
And now, mademoiselle, there is much that you wish to ask me. I can see that. And why not? Is not the affair of the blue train our own Roman policier?
Yes, there are things I should like to ask you.
Eh bien?
Catherine looked up with a sudden air of resolution.
What were you doing in Paris, Monsieur Poirot?
Poirot smiled slightly.
I made the call at the Russian embassy.
Oh.
I see that tells you nothing. But I will not be a human oyster. No, I will lay my cards on the table, which is assuredly a thing that oysters do not do. You suspect, do you not, that I am satisfied with the case against Derek Kettering?
That is what I've been wondering. I thought, in Nice, that you had finished with the case.
You do not say all that you mean, mademoiselle, but I admit everything. It was I, my researches, which placed Derek Kettering where he is now. But for me, the examining magistrate would still be vainly trying to fasten the crime on the Comte de la Roche. Eh bien, mademoiselle, what I have done I do not regret. I have only one duty, to discover the truth, and that way led straight to Mr. Kettering. But did it end there? The police say yes, but I, Hercule Poirot, am not satisfied.
He broke off suddenly.
Tell me, mademoiselle, have you heard from Mademoiselle Lennox lately?
One short, very scrappy letter. She is, I think, annoyed with me for coming back to England.
Poirot nodded. I had an interview with her the night that Monsieur Kettering was arrested. It was an interesting interview in more ways than one.
Again he fell silent, and Catherine did not interrupt his train of thought.
Mademoiselle, he said at last, I am now on delicate ground, yet I will say this to you. There is, I think, someone who loves Monsieur Kettering. Correct me if I am wrong. And for her sake, well, for her sake I hope that I am right and the police are wrong. Do you know who that someone is?
There was a pause. Then Catherine said,
Yes, I think I know.
Poirot leant across the table towards her.
I am not satisfied, mademoiselle. No, I am not satisfied. The facts, the main facts, led straight to Monsieur Kettering. But there is one thing that has been left out of the account. The disfigured face of the victim. I have asked myself, mademoiselle, 100 times, was Derek Kettering the kind of man who would deal that smashing blow after having committed the murder? What end would it serve him? What purpose would it accomplish? Was it a likely action for one of Monsieur Kettering's temperament? And, mademoiselle, the answer to these questions is profoundly unsatisfactory. Again and again I go back to that one point. Why? And the only things I have to help me to a solution of the problem are these.
He whipped out his pocketbook and extracted something from it which he held between his finger and thumb.
Do you remember, mademoiselle? You saw me take these hairs from the rug in the railway carriage.
Catherine leant forward, scrutinizing the hairs keenly. Poirot nodded his head slowly several times.
They suggest nothing to you, I see that, mademoiselle. And yet, I think somehow that you see a good deal.
I have had ideas, said Catherine slowly, curious ideas. That is why I asked you what you were doing in Paris, Monsieur Poirot.
When I wrote to you.
From the Ritz? A curious smile came over Poirot's face.
Yes, as you say, from the Ritz. I am a luxurious person sometimes, when a millionaire pays.
The Russian embassy? Said Catherine, frowning. No, I don't see where that comes in.
It does not come in directly, mademoiselle. I went there to get certain information. I saw a particular personage, and I threatened him. Yes, mademoiselle. I, Hercule Poirot, threatened him.
With the police?
No, said Poirot dryly. With the press,
a much more deadly weapon. He looked at Catherine, and she smiled at him, just shaking her head. "Are you not just turning back into an oyster again, Monsieur Poirot?"
"No, no. I do not wish to make mysteries. See, I will tell you everything. I suspect these men of being the active party in the sale of the jewels of Monsieur Van Alden. I tax him with it, and in the end I get the whole story out of him. I learn where the jewels were handed over, and I learn, too, of the man who paced up and down outside in the street. A man with a venerable head of white hair, but who walked with the light, springy step of a young man. And I give that man a name in my own mind, the name of Monsieur le Marquis."
"And now you've come to London to see Mr. Van Alden?"
"Not entirely for that reason. I had other work to do. Since I've been in London, I've seen two more people, a theatrical agent and a Harley Street doctor. From each of them I've got certain information. Put these things together, mademoiselle, and see if you can make of them the same as I do."
"I?"
"Yes, you. I will tell you one thing, mademoiselle. There has been a doubt all along in my mind as to whether the robbery and the murder were done by the same person. For a long time I was not sure."
"And now?"
"And now I know."
There was a silence. Then Catherine lifted her head. Her eyes were shining. "I am not clever like you, Monsieur Poirot. Half the things that you have been telling me don't seem to me to point anywhere at all. The ideas that came to me came from such an entirely different angle."
"Ah, but that is always so," said Poirot quietly. "A mirror shows the truth, but everyone stands in a different place for looking into the mirror.
My ideas may be absurd. They may be entirely different from yours, but...
Tell me, does this help you at all?"
He took a newspaper cutting from her outstretched hand. He read it, and, looking up, he nodded gravely.
"As I told you, mademoiselle, one stands at a different angle for looking into the mirror, but it is the same mirror, and the same things are reflected there."
Catherine got up. "I must rush," she said. "I have only just time to catch my train, Monsieur Poirot."
"Yes, mademoiselle."
It mustn't be much longer, do you understand? I can't go on much longer."
There was a break in her voice. He patted her hand reassuringly.
"Courage, mademoiselle. You must not fail now. The end is very near."
And now, Chapter 33, A New Theory.
"Monsieur Poirot wants to see you, sir."
"Damn the fellow," said Van Alden. Knighton remained sympathetically silent. Van Alden got up from his chair and paced up and down.
"I suppose you've seen the cursed newspapers this morning?"
"I have glanced at them, sir."
"Still at it, hammer and tongs?"
"I'm afraid so, sir."
The millionaire sat down again and pressed his hand to his forehead.
"If I had had an idea of this," he groaned, "I wish to God I'd never got that little Belgian to ferret out the truth. Find Ruth's murderer. That was all I thought about."
"You wouldn't have liked your son-in-law to go scot-free?"
Van Alden sighed.
"I would have preferred to take the law into my own hands."
"I don't think that would have been a very wise proceeding, sir."
"All the same, are you sure the fellow wants to see me?"
"Yes, Mr. Van Alden. He's very urgent about it."
"Then I suppose he'll have to. He can come along this morning if he likes."
It was a very fresh and debonair Poirot who was ushered in. He did not seem to see any lack of cordiality in the millionaire's manner, and chatted pleasantly about various trifles. He was in London, he explained, to see his doctor. He mentioned the name of an eminent surgeon.
"No, no, Paul Laguerre, a memory of my days in the police force, with a bullet of a rascally Apache."
He touched his left shoulder and winced realistically.
"I always consider you a lucky man, Monsieur Van Alden. You are not like our popular idea of American millionaires, martyrs to the dyspepsia."
"I am pretty tough," said Van Alden. "I lead a very simple life, you know, plain fare, and not too much of it.
"'You have seen something in Miss Gray, have you not?'
inquired Poirot, innocently turning to the secretary.
"'Yes, once or twice,' said Knighton.
He blushed slightly, and Van Alden exclaimed in surprise,
"'That's funny. Never mentioned to me you'd seen her, Knighton.'
"'I didn't think you'd be interested, sir.
"'I like that girl very much,' said Van Alden.
"'It is a thousand pities that she should have buried herself once more in St. Mary Mead,' said Poirot.
"'It is very fine of her,' said Knighton, hotly. "'There are very few people who would bury themselves down there "'to look after a cantankerous old woman who has no earthly claim on her.'
"'I am silent,' said Poirot, his eyes twinkling a little. "'But all the same, I say it is a pity. "'And now, messieurs, let us come to business.'
Both the other men looked at him in some surprise.
"'You must not be shocked or alarmed at what I am about to say. "'Supposing, Monsieur Van Alden, that after all, "'Monsieur Derek Catherine did not murder his wife.'
"'What?'
Both men stared at him in blank surprise.
"'Supposing, I say, that Monsieur Catherine did not murder his wife.'
"'Are you mad, Monsieur Poirot?'
It was Van Alden who spoke.
"'No,' said Poirot, "'I am not mad. "'I am eccentric, perhaps. "'At least certain people say so. "'But as regards my profession, "'I am very much, as one says, all there. "'I ask you, Monsieur Van Alden, "'whether you would be glad or sorry "'if what I tell you should be the case.'
"'Van Alden stared at him.
"'Naturally, I should be glad,' he said at last.
"'Is this an exercise in suppositions, Monsieur Poirot? "'Or are there any facts behind it?'
"'Poirot looked at the ceiling.
"'There is an off chance,' he said quietly, "'that it might be the Comte de la Roche, after all. "'At least I have succeeded in upsetting his alibi.'
"'How did you manage that?'
"'Poirot shrugged his shoulders modestly.
"'I have my own methods. "'The exercise of a little tact, a little cleverness,' "'And the thing is done.'
"'But the rubies,' said Van Alden, "'these rubies that the Count had in his possession were false.'
"'And clearly he would not have committed the crime except for the rubies. "'But you are overlooking one point, Monsieur Van Alden. "'Where the rubies were concerned, someone might have been before him.'
"'But this is an entirely new theory,' cried Knighton.
"'Do you really believe all this rigmarole, Monsieur Poirot?' demanded the millionaire.
"'The thing is not proved,' said Poirot quietly. "'It is as yet only a theory. "'But I tell you this, Monsieur Van Alden, "'the facts are worth investigating. "'You must come out with me to the south of France "'and go into the case on the spot.'
"'You really think this is necessary, that I should go? "'I mean,
I thought it would be what you yourself would wish.'
said Poirot.
There was a hint of reproach in his tone, which was not lost upon the other.
"'Yes, yes, of course,' he said. "'When do you wish to start, Monsieur Poirot?'
"'You are very busy at present, sir,'
murmured Knighton. But the millionaire had now made up his mind, and he waved the other's objections aside.
"'I guess this business comes first,' he said. "'All right, Poirot, tomorrow. What train?'
"'We'll go, I think, by the blue train,' said Poirot,
and he smiled. Thanks for joining us for chapters 31 through 33 of The Mystery of the Blue Train by Agatha Christie. Next week, we'll wrap up the story with chapters 34, 35, and 36. You won't want to miss it. This is your host and storyteller, John Hagedorn. This is 1001 Stories for the Road. Reviews are greatly appreciated. We'll be back next Sunday at noon Eastern Time. Until that time, everyone, take care, and we'll be back soon.